Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, and you're listening to the Gypsy Musher here on Dog Works Radio. You can find all of our episodes over on iTunes, and we're on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, whatever. Just search for us at Dog Works Radio and dogworksradio.com. Calling in from Laughing Eyes Kennel in Tok, Alaska is Hugh Neff. Hugh, how's it going?
Hey, good morning, Robert. I haven't talked to you in a long time. Doing well. Just been back for a few days now. Gonna load up a few more dogs and head back to Fairbanks. We've got our Iditarod testing this week, and gonna do a little bit longer run this upcoming weekend, and then get ready for the last great race the following weekend. So you know, this busy time of year. Had a fun quest. Obviously, a lot of bizarre stuff happened out there, but what else is new?
Right.
But the dogs did great, and I was pleased with how we did considering how few miles I had compared to past years.
So we're also joined by a friend of yours. We've had him on the show before, Sam Jackson. He is from England, but he's also helping you out this winter with handling for the quest, but also doing a lot of the training runs earlier in the season, earlier this year, as you guys got prepared for the quest. Go ahead and introduce Sam and have him come on and maybe give a quick intro about who he is and what he's all about.
Oh, well, you know, I've been coming to Sam's place in Nafferton for the last couple of years. His Mrs. Sue has been kind enough to let him hang out with me for a few months this year. And, you know, he has goals and dreams of doing some long-distance racing. Not enough dogs in the kennel this year to really be able to outfit two teams, but I know he got plenty of experience, and I know he's not exactly looking forward to having to go back to his auto mechanic shop back home. Sam, say hi.
Morning, Robert.
Good morning, Sam. How are you?
Not bad, thank you.
So Sam, tell us about your adventures. Go ahead.
So you should just tell me what it was like handling for the quest race.
It was fun. Yes. It was tiring. A lot of driving. But, yeah, it was good.
Tell us about your time up here in Alaska. What have you done over the last couple of months? I've been following you guys on Facebook. It looks like you've got quite a bit of time on the runners. How has it been to spend a winter up in one of the coldest parts of Alaska?
Oh, it's all been fun. The first week we got here, it was 40 below, so it was a bit of a shock to the system. But, no, if I haven't been handling with you on the quest, I've been running a team of dogs, doing what I can to help you with the training, really.
Right. And are you getting quite a bit of experience there? I know you have, as Hugh had mentioned a few minutes ago, you have some dreams and aspirations of one day doing a long-distance race. Do you feel pretty comfortable on the runners now?
I do, yeah. Yeah, I've been out nearly every day. We've been in talk, so, yeah. We've had moose on the trail, so I was running at the deep end really at the beginning, but it was all good fun.
Good fun.
Excellent. You know, Hugh, it always happens like that, doesn't it?
Yeah, Robert, I've been here going on 7 years, and I've never seen a moose on the trail. This guy's here a week, and he sees a moose.
Right. Trial by fire, for sure. You know, we had a group of students out here this weekend for the expedition, and they saw a little bit of everything. It's just real interesting how when you're on the runners for those first few times, how much can go right or wrong in a matter of a few minutes. Is that right, Sam?
Yeah, it can. Yeah.
He's had his buddy Alex. He's the younger guy, if you remember, Robert. He's had him as his ballast in the sled. So he hasn't been out there alone. In case they've had issues out there, they're able to help each other out. They've been running 12 dog teams.
Right.
The amazing thing is they'll call me or text me and tell me who they got in the lead, and I'll look at it and go, oh, my God, I didn't know that dog was a leader. So these guys have been great. They've been doing a lot of experimenting.
Excellent. So, Hugh, how has winter been up there? We haven't had you on since early in the fall. I guess things really got crazy. We didn't do any shows with you over the past few months. How has winter been up in Tok? I know that they moved the race from down here in Willow to Fairbanks for Iditarod. We've got plenty of snow down here. Sam mentioned 40 below. What kind of snow have you had? What are the trails like up your area?
Oh, it's better now, but we still can barely set a snow hook around here, so it isn't like what you guys have. For me, lowest amount of miles ever, I was doing a fun little race in Wisconsin near my old Boy Scout camp where I was doing a talk at, and I wiped out on a cart in November, and pretty much my left shoulder's been non-usable for the last few months. It's coming around now, thankfully, but it's one of these injuries. It's a throbbing pain where you can't really lift your left arm higher than, you know, your shoulder. So just been taking it easy. Been taking care of, 40-plus dogs by myself pretty much until the Englishman came and saved the day here just a while back, about a month and a half, 2 months ago. So it was a way of slowing down and enjoying the small things in life, put it that way. I wasn't able to put as much miles on the dogs. Hooking up a 12-dog team with one arm can be a little bit interesting. But I still tried to do 15-mile runs repeatedly. And I just think having older dogs is what really made it a little bit easier. You know, my average age of the team was about 6 or 7 years old. Just three or four youngsters to have to worry about their habits. You know, a lot of dog mushing isn't about talent. It's about habits. And it's about how the dogs are getting along with each other and stuff like that. So definitely glad these guys came to save the day. Life has definitely been a lot easier since I've been having these guys around.
So let's jump over and talk a little bit about the Quest. As most people know that are fans of yours, you had a pretty impressive second place finish there. I know you say all the time it's not about the money or the wins, it's always about the dogs, and I definitely want to talk about that. But the first thing I want to ask you about is with your shoulder injury there, there was a pretty impressive picture of a pretty decent crash of you on the Yukon Quest site. I guess it was in the first couple of days of the race. Was
the
trail real bad
miles.
There in that first part?
It was the first 10 miles. They actually put in a trail. They had to go around the river, and accidentally, or just people not knowing how dangerous it can be on a dog team, the trail was put in on a direct 90-degree angle to the left with a tree that you had to go around and a cliff on the other side of the trail. And there are four different teams that went over that cliff. I was one of them. I got intertwined with Paige Drobny. The dog, we had to flip the sled over with help from another musher, Gaetan Perard. I started going careening down the hill to hit a tree with my sled, and the carbiner snapped in half. And so my dog team ran down the hill, and here I am with the sled. There's a lot of race fans that were down at the bottom of the hill where the river was. So they grabbed the dogs and lined them all out for me, and then I had to haul the fully loaded sled down to there and rehook the dogs, and thankfully everybody was okay. So the beauty of it was the Quest found out about it, and the mishap was as far as the Canadian Rangers were the ones who put in the trail. So once the Quest found out about it, they went out there on their own and they guided all the teams down safely. So it wasn't a very hugely dramatic fall compared to the steps or something like that, but it was still pretty intense. That was the worst start to any race in my life, actually. Because after that, I went another couple hours, tried to set a hook, and the team pulled a hook and took off on me again. So I'd lost my team twice in one day. And the sled flipped over and all my food came out, Robert. So I actually, there's a reason I ran to Braeburn that first day of that race. I didn't have any food. I had two snacks.
Wow.
I didn't really food to rest for 3 or 4 hours. So it made more sense for me since the dogs had been there 4 or 5 times already. They knew where it was to get there, have a nice extended break, my mandatory 4 hour, and then go from there. So, the one thing about mushing is you got to be able to go with the flow.
Right. I was just going to mention, Hugh, for folks that obviously have never been on a dog sled, a lot of the fans that are listening, in that first 10 miles, man, it's like firing all cylinders. You're still rocking and rolling just like you were leaving the chute because you're only just a little bit of a ways into the race. And when you have something crazy like that with all the teams, things can get interesting in a hurry, can't it?
Oh, yeah. Luckily, the Quest, you know, the beauty of the Quest is just the peacefulness and quiet. And you actually enjoy it like you're actually back in the olden days where you're out there by yourself. I remember Catherine Keith, John Baker's missus, saying, I'm a little bit, you know, bored. There's nobody to hang out with. And I look at her and I go, that's what the quest is all about, doing it on your own and being by yourself. So that first day you're going to see some teams, but after that you're usually on your own for most of the race.
Right.
I did differently this year compared to past years is a lot of teams like to sort of slowly work their teams into doing a little bit longer runs. This year, I pretty much ran the whole week leading up to the race. I did a couple 40s and a 25 out at Annie Lake just to get the dog's metabolism going and getting them in a nice, you know, frame of mind. So it's like a lot of people have proven over the years, when you run dogs more often, not necessarily how far, but just more often, I think it's to the benefit of the dog team, even close up
right.
to race time.
And you've talked about that a lot here on this show. It's not necessarily going out for, you know, mega couple hundred mile runs at a stretch. Just getting out there and doing it and spending time with the dogs is usually more beneficial than just pounding away miles. So, you had, like I said, you had a pretty impressive second place finish, and you came into Fairbanks with a happy 12 dogs. Is that right?
11, actually. I had to drop
11.
George. I dropped the last dog I dropped was George at 101 right after Eagle Summit. He had a cut on his was that back left toe. Mm. He's doing okay now and trying to steal everybody's food as usual. But I really needed him for Eagle Summit, and he performed like the man that he is. But it was tough to let him go. That was the first time I had ever dropped him in a race in 10 years.
Wow!
But after him, I had Mojito, Rosalita in lead most of the time. Their sister Havana. I had Stevie Ray in lead a lot in the beginning, but Stevie's sort of a spaz still. He's a little bit younger. The funny thing was, at the end of the race, and this is the coolest part of the race, Robert, I had a dog, Lester's little sister, Calypso, did her very first race ever, dude, of any race. And
wow.
She finished. And the beauty of her is, she was in swing most of the time, and she had her tail straight up in the air because she was in full-blown heat. So if she ever went to the bathroom, those boys were all sniffing the ground like madmen trying to get at her. It was pretty funny to watch. It is the birds and the bees, after all.
Right. Yeah, it definitely is, for sure. So, Hugh, I know you wanted to talk a little bit about some of the things that were said during and after the race. We're not going to get too gossipy or too political, for sure, but I know you wanted to say a piece or two, right?
Well, just for all those fans who actually want to know what happened out there instead of listening to some guy from Alabama or other people who think they have some insight into the world of the trail, even though they're not even anywhere close to being in our world. Basically, the whole second half of the race, Brent was doing amazing. He was stockpiling hours, resting up his dogs, and his team looked beautiful at every point. Matt made a really amazing strategic move to blow through Trout Creek, where we usually camp out for 2 to 3 hours, and he went all the way to Slavin's. Being from that area, his dogs were familiar with the trail a lot more than the rest of ours, I believe. He might have better insight into that, but I, you know, having grown up there, his dogs had a better feel for the environment, put it that way. It's a very forlorn country out there in the Yukon Charlie area, so you need dogs that are tough mentally. It's just not all physical. People don't realize how much of mentally and psychologically dog racing is. And people don't also realize that when we are doing these longer runs like he did there or I did in other parts of the race, we're not just running the dogs nonstop. We're stopping along the way and snacking them, giving them little pep talk breaks. There's a way to do long runs, and it's not about speed. It's just about a nice even keel, sort of like being on a ship at sea, going through waters that might be a little bit choppy. So, it's an art form, and a lot of people might want to judge us on the internet about, oh, those poor dogs, blah, blah, blah. But hey, man, I finished with 11 dogs. I had a strong 12-dog team for most of the race. I'm quite proud of my record as a musher. If people want to judge me, whatever. Most of the people judging me have done, you know, 1 or 2 or 3 or 4,000 milers. This Iditarod will be my 30th since
wow.
the year 2000. So for all those folks who want to judge me, judge as you shall be judged.
You know, Hugh, I just have a couple of points on this. We did our weekly show on Mushing Radio real close to about the time that Ryan Olson finished. I think she was in about eighth or ninth place or so. And I was looking at all of the dogs that were finishing, and it looked like most people had most of their team still on the line. You know, 10, 9, 10, 11, even 12 dogs with some of these folks.
Yeah.
Why do you think this year there was just so much vitriol from all of the people on the internet, not only from, you know, the fans that may not know much about mushing at all, but also the journalists and, you know, the armchair mushers who get paid to do this? Why do you think there was just so much back and forth bitterness?
I don't really care about those people, to be quite honest. They are what they are, as Lance would say.
Right.
You know, there's good people and bad people in life, and it is what it is. But the beauty of it is the Quest promotes keeping bigger dog teams because you need that power to get up those hills, and that's why we're not using dogs and hauling them in our sleds to only do 500 miles of a race. We're wanting those dogs to run the whole 1,000 miles, and having that more experienced dog team is a huge advantage, and that's why I like to promote running older dogs. A lot of the dogs in my team have done the Quest 6-7 times, so I don't really worry about what's being said on the internet because I never look at it, to be quite honest. I promote positive vibes in the dog mushing world, and the people who have been doing this have been doing it for years, and a lot of these people are the same people that have used these races to make who they are. So I just hope they realize sooner or later to try to give back instead of continually using the community. You got to give back in some way. And that's why the beauty of the Quest, and anybody who's been to the Quest, and you can talk to Jesse Roy or Cat Keith, long time Iditarod girl, lady mushers that have completed the race this year, about the beauty of the Quest is how we're all together as one and we're family. And I'm going up to see Brent here this week. And I know a lot of other mushers, Cody and some other folks who've been, you know, trying to help him out with that whole situation because, you know, it's a dramatic thing that happened, and people get excited by it in a sort of bizarre way like they do watching movies on TV or what have you. But as a musher who does this race year after year, I'm not really worried about what people are saying on the internet. I'm worried about my buddies and my dogs and the folks who support the Quest because this isn't something we do for people to watch on the internet. This is something we do to enjoy life. It's what we live for.
Right. Well, good words for sure. Hugh, we have about 10 minutes. Let's talk a little bit about Iditarod. It's coming up in about 2.5 weeks, I guess, from now. You mentioned you're heading up to Fairbanks to do the mandatory vet checks with the EKGs and blood work and all of that. And I guess my question to you is how is Sam involved with this? How much longer is he with you here in Alaska, and what is his role during this next race in preparation for? Is he going to be handling for you over the next couple of weeks? What are you going to use your pit crew for, I guess?
No, Sam's got his boss is going to be showing up here soon in a couple of weeks, his lady Sue. So you'll be seeing us down there in a bit, Robert, for the ceremonial at least. People, even though the race started in Fairbanks, we still do the ceremonial in Anchorage. But we're talking about it off air. I mean, it's just so strange this year how there's decent snow all over Alaska, except for parts of the Iditarod Trail, which is sort of a bummer, obviously. Sam helps out with, you know, getting ready for the ceremonial and stuff of that nature. But realistically, he's been the main kennel boss here this winter. Has done a good job keeping the show going because people don't realize it's not just about training up the dogs. We're living at 40 below up here. I live in a cabin, wood heated. You know, I have water, but these pipes can freeze up, so we have to have fans going and get everything crank started every day, whether it's getting the trucks all plugged in and getting the blower heater going to thaw out your engine. Living up in the north is not as easy as other parts of Alaska. But we treasure the privacy we have up here. And that's a lot of what dog mushing is all about.
Is Sam still there online?
Yeah. Go ahead, Sam.
Hey, Sam, I got a couple of questions for you about your time up here in Alaska. Can you share with our listeners some of the things that you learned? You know, it's a lot different living at those temperatures than it is where you're at in England. What are some of the things that you I guess, took for granted before you got here, and now that you know that you've done it, that you're happy for the experience?
I don't know, really. I've been coming to Alaska for about 6 years now, so I kind of knew what to expect. I'd never experienced minus 40, but...
40.
You've just got to be getting on with things. You soon keep warm if you're busy.
I know when you first got there, you guys had a heck of a time getting one of the trucks going. I guess it took several days to finally get that thing to turn over, and it was just so cold. And I know you're a mechanic, as what Hugh said earlier. That's a different challenge than what you're used to over in England. Is that right?
It was, yeah. It was the starter motor on Hugh's truck. Obviously, the truck's outside. It was 40 below. I needed to be underneath to do it. So I spent 2 days laid on the floor, 40 below, with spanners sticking to my fingers because obviously I couldn't use gloves. I kept running into the cabin every 5 minutes and putting the spanners on the stove to warm up and then running back out. But we got it running. We got to the quest and...
the rest is history.
Yeah.
Well, you know how it is. Most of these races you're going to have to use. That's just part of the program.
Yeah, you're lucky to sort of limp to the mushers meeting when it's that cold, and equipment problems and car problems and all sorts of things happen when it's that cold. I don't think a lot of folks that are listening have experienced 40 below, because you know it just doesn't get that cold in most parts of the country, and if it does, maybe it's for a day or two. But life is a lot different, and I know Sam can attest now to living in those temperatures for an extended period of time. So, Hugh, let's jump real quick over back to Iditarod. I just really have one question for you for the folks that are listening now that it is happening in Fairbanks. How does that change up what you do in order to plan for? Because it's a different trail than it is every other year. I know you guys were there just a couple of years ago. I guess that was in... Was that in 15 or 14 that you guys ran that route? And how does that change up what you're planning to do on this year's race? Do you take different dogs? Do you have a different strategy? Not to let the cat out of the bag, but what's different?
It was 15, and basically it's going to be a lot flatter race is the main difference. Colder. I mean, people, we were really surprised 2 years ago because we got up to Huslia. It was 40 below. That's where I took my 24-hour. And then, I mean, we got like 40, 45 below for a good 3 or 4 days there. It was pretty intense cold and trail that's not used that heavily. So when you get that type of trail, it usually ends up being a little bit sugary snow because it gets trampled upon by so many teams, it gets opened up a little bit. So it could be a workout on the dogs. This year, I've only had 16 dogs, Robert, or 17 dogs to pick from. I've got a lot of yearlings and 2-year-olds on the yard, but most of my yard is, you know, either older dogs or I've got a forest litter that's going on 3.5. So I really haven't had that many dogs to choose from. So I just keep on telling myself, and I was telling it to the reporters the whole race. And the quest was, you know, I'm just traveling, having fun. Don't worry about the competition part. That's really where you start maybe doing things that you shouldn't be doing and pushing your dogs or what have you. So this year I'm just looking to go traveling, visit, you know, the friends I have along the way, and let the racing happen at the end of the race. And it can get cold, it can be windy. We don't know what we're going to see out there. That's the beauty of the Iditarod.
So what's happening after Iditarod? Do you have any trips planned? I know your school tour comes up in May, which is just a couple of months after Iditarod. What's happening for the rest of the spring and into summer?
I'm not positive it's happening, but I was invited by a friend on Facebook, Stefan Falter, to go do a race outside of Kirkenes called the Posvik Trail, which would be after Iditarod. We'll see if it happens or not, but I would love to get out that way again. And then, of course, yeah, I've got my school talks that I'll be doing in May. But for right now, it's all about, you know, resting up,
getting some good weight back on the dogs, doing some traveling. I'm going to head up to Manly Hot Springs here in a few days and do some runs up in that area on the river, get the dogs used to, you know, living on the river, because we'll be doing a lot of that. But this time of year in Alaska is a great time of year. It's usually getting more daylight. People start to get, you know, happy, good moods, get out and play. And I'm, you know, Iditarod's fun. I love the Quest like no other race, but I love the Iditarod too. And it can be a little bit more dramatic, the Iditarod, with all the attention it gets. So I think as you get older, you realize the smartest thing you can do as a musher is just try to get in your own little bubble and be with the dogs and just concentrate on them.
Excellent. All right, guys, on behalf of Sam Jackson, he's going to be heading back to his native England in a bit, and Hugh Neff, who will be hitting the Iditarod Trail in about 2.5 weeks. Thanks for the show, guys, and maybe I'll see you when you're down here in town.
All right, Robert. Hey, by the way, Alex Parker's here, is here as well. He just woke up.
All right. What's up, Alex? Nice meeting you again on the radio, Sam. We'll see you soon, all right?
Yeah, thank you very much.
God save the Queen.
Thank you. There you go. All right, guys. We'll talk to you guys next time. On behalf of the Gypsy Musher Radio Show, we'll see you then. Bye.